From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, well, we begin our trek for Fright Week as we lead up to Friday night's Ghost to Ghost on Halloween. Linda Backman joins us next hour as we talk about what happens to souls between incarnations, bringing your soul to light. Now, here's some program notes for you. On Election Night Tuesday, we will have a special edition of Coast to Coast AM beginning at 9 p.m. Pacific Time, midnight Eastern Time, for those stations that carry the program early. A couple hundred stations around the country run part of Coast to Coast early each night before they pick up the live program. Well, we are going to have a live special edition of Election Night Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific Time, again, midnight Eastern Time, for those stations that pick up the program or those stations that want to pick up this special edition. We'll have a number of reporters all around the country reporting on the happenings of the major election, of course. Now, the regular show will start in its normal time period, and we'll have our own coast-to-coast twist and maybe even a toast during the evening, and we've got a number of guests coming in as well that evening as well. So that's Election Night Tuesday next week. Hard to believe it's already here, isn't it? You can add purple tomatoes to the list of cancer-fighting foods. British researchers engineered the fruit to contain nutrients more commonly seen in dark berries, which have been shown to lower the risk of cancer, heart disease, and some neurological diseases. For the study, cancer-prone mice fed the fruit lived on an average of 40 days longer than animals on a standard diet. Researchers focused on a type of antioxidant found in berries such as blackberries or black currants. The researchers said the trial in humans still a long way off, but it seems to work for mice. Stress has been found to activate the immune system in the skin of mice, causing them to itch. So if you're under a lot of stress and you seem to be itching a lot, I guess it's normal. They say that it holds true for humans. Itching remains somewhat mysterious. It's similar to pain and how it develops and plays out in our bodies. Because the skin is also on the front lines against infection, it is a place where white blood cells attack invading bacteria and viruses. The immune cells and skin sometimes overreact, though, causing the inflammation in some skin diseases such as dermatitis and psoriasis. Federal prosecutors in Tennessee have charged two men with plotting a killing spree against African Americans that would have been capped in an attempt to kill Democratic presidential candidate Senator Barack Obama. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Jackson, Tennessee, said 20-year-old Daniel Cowart and Paul Schlesselman, he's 18, described as white supremacists who met online through a mutual friend. Both men have been charged with illegal possession of a sawed-off shotgun, conspiracy to rob a federally licensed gun dealer, and making threats against a presidential candidate. In Westfield, Massachusetts, an 8-year-old boy died after accidentally shooting himself in the head while firing an Uzi submachine gun under adult supervision at a gun fair. The boy lost control of the weapon while firing it at the Machine Gun Shoot and Firearms Expo at the Westfield Sportsman's Club. In Florida, bees that had been living on the shutters of a vacant house in a neighborhood have killed three dogs and injured a 70-year-old woman. Nancy Hill stepped outside of her home about 4:30 p.m. to walk her two dogs. She made it 15 feet from the door when the bees swarmed her, then killed the 7-year-old dogs. Palm Beach County Animal Control say also the bees attacked and stung two pit bulls, killing one and sending the other to the hospital. Mary Roach is the author and has written columns and feature articles for several national publications. Her books, Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, and also Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife. She's with us now to talk about this strange story. Mary, how unusual is this for bees, one, to attack like this, and then to actually kill animals or even severely injure a person?
Well, it sounds like those are Africanized bees or killer bees, which came into this country around 1990, crossed up from Central America. And they don't attack randomly, but if you get too close to a large hive, they get very defensive, and they will swarm, and they are 10 times as aggressive as a regular honeybee, and they will keep on stinging and stinging. And dogs, especially a dog that's tied up, that's often the victims. Sometimes elderly people who can't run away quickly also get stung quite a lot. Usually, these bees fly 12 miles per hour, so the advice that's given is run as fast as you can. And usually, if you've got a lot of bees coming at you, you have a lot of adrenaline in your system, and you can outrun them. And they give up after they don't pursue you that far. So you probably come out of it with a couple dozen stings, and you're fine because it's the same venom. It's just that, you know, if you fall and you can't get away, then you get overwhelmed, and you get, you know, 1,300 stings is about what it takes to kill an adult. So you definitely want to run away from them.
Mary, in North America, whereabouts are these bees now?
They're a tropical species. They can't take the cold. So they came first into Texas, very bottom. Brownsville, Texas is where they were doing a lot of research. Texas and Florida. And I'm not sure how far they've come up. You don't hear too much about them these days. When they first crossed into the country, you'd hear a lot more about them.
Okay, thanks, Mary. Mary Roach, her website is stifthebook.com. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you. The government will begin doling out $125 billion to 9 major banks this week as part of its effort to contain a growing financial crisis. Assistant Treasury Secretary David Nason says the deals with the 9 banks were signed Sunday night, and the government will make the stock purchases this week. The deals are designed to bolster the bank's balance sheet so that they will begin more normal lending again. The action will mark the first deployment of resources from the government's $700 billion financial rescue package, they say, passed by Congress on October 3rd. Here he is, Gerald Celente, founder director of the Trends Research Institute. Well, Gerald, the capital is going to float in. Will it help?
Well, no, it'll help a bit, but what's really going on, and this isn't making the news, is that the original idea behind this bailout bill, this money, was to buy up bad mortgages and a bad mortgage-related debt. That's what we were told. It's been reported, and it came out in the New York Times on Saturday, that a reporter was listening in on a closed conference call for J.P. Morgan Chase. And they said that they were going to use their $25 billion not to buy up this bad mortgage-related debt, but rather than to make acquisitions, to buy troubled banks, to grow bigger. That's where the money's going, George. That's where the big bucks are going, the $25 billion. KeyBank, for example, they got $2.5 billion. So that's what we're seeing here, consolidation. It's going to get bigger and bigger. And it's important also to note that story was hardly covered. And Saturday's newspapers are the least read, of course, of the week. So this is what's going on with that money. No, it's not going to do anything. The debt levels are enormous. They're only talking about one sector. And wait till we start seeing retail firms start to crash, all of these leveraged buyouts start to unwind. And along with that, you're going to see the whole commercial real estate sector unravel. And that hasn't been making the news yet either.
You're absolutely right about that, Gerald. Tonight I was talking to a couple commercial lenders who said that these little suites, these office suites and these commercial lending and these commercial strip malls, they're going to get hit really big, they say.
They're going to get hit big, and we're also going to start seeing ghost malls. For example, new malls have been built that have not yet been occupied because the developers don't have the lease promises anymore, the guarantees that they once had. The lessees are backing out.
And in the old days, the banks would insist on leases, and I guess they got a little lenient, didn't they? And now they're going to get in trouble.
They're going to get in trouble, and the people that have promised to take the leases out and signed on with them, they're backing out because they're closing down.
All right, Gerald, thanks for that update. And we're going to continue to give you updates on this financial situation for as long as we have to. A U.S. strike on a network of foreign fighters in Syria killed its main target, an Al-Qaeda coordinator, who was wanted for sending foreign fighters, weapons, and cash into Iraq, killed in Sunday's attack by the Special Operations Forces, was Abu Ghaddadin, al-Qaeda's senior coordinator operating in Syria, who is closely associated with the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, Syria, protesting the bombing there. In a moment, we're going to be talking with paranormal researcher and investigator Chad Lewis. And get ready, because you're going to love this on Coast to Coast AM. Paranormal researcher and investigator Chad Lewis hosts the show Unexplained Research and is the author of the Hidden Headline series and co-author of the book series Road Guide to Haunted Locations. Chad's investigative journeys have taken him to the far corners of the world to search the paranormal, including tracking vampires, chasing chupacabras, pursuing ghosts in Ireland's castles. Chad has acquired a wealth of research knowledge and has more than 14 years of experience. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Chad, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, nice to talk to you again, George, and
you
greetings from Wisconsin.
You are getting Fright Week started in a grand way for us, my friend.
Well, what a better week, huh?
You got it. Tracking vampires? What's the matter with you?
Well, of course, when you're looking for vampires, you have to go to where the lore is. So I had to pack up my gear, grab my cross, and head over to Transylvania looking for these creatures.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Halloween. We're coming up on it. It's an exciting time. Parents love it. Kids love it. I haven't run into anybody who doesn't enjoy Halloween. How do we get the ghosts and the hauntings all tied into this?
Yes, you can almost feel it even now, Halloween coming and people getting excited about Halloween. And really, Halloween ties in with ghosts and haunted locations pretty easily, because the belief is that on Halloween, the dead come back and walk the earth with us. That veil that's between our living world and the spirit world becomes maybe a little more blended, a little faded, where we could cross over into their world, or maybe they cross into our world. So that belief that if there are spirits coming back, Halloween's certainly the day for them to do so.
Now, you have traveled all around this planet doing haunted searches and research. In your travels, Chad, let's name a few cities that you've been to and what their customs are to see if they're any different. Are you there? No, he's not. Well, we'll call him right back. Chad's in a hotel room, and that's the problem. So we'll have Tommy give him a call, and we'll try to get him right back for you get him. Chad, by the way, is going to talk about some of his visits to various cities and locations, and if we don't get him back, we'll go into open lines. So let me give you some of those phone numbers if you want, just as a little backup, just in case. The West of the Rockies line is 800-618-8255. The East of the Rockies line is 800-825-5033. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And we do have him. So let's pull him back in. Chad, you disappeared on us, but it's good to have you back.
Yes, well, George, you know, it could be that I'm staying in a hotel this evening, and the last digits of the phone here happen to be 666, so maybe that's something to do with you losing
well,
me here.
That doesn't give us an advantage, that's for sure.
Right.
Okay, I was asking you, of the cities that you visit around this planet, what are some of the scariest, and what are their customs?
Certainly. I really liked over in Romania, in Transylvania. I was looking for vampires and legends and lore of the creatures. They often threw in some werewolf stories as well. But everywhere we went in these little villages, they would have the locals selling masks. And we thought they were strange, because these were some of the creepiest masks I've ever seen. They were homemade, paper mache, and they would put in whatever they had, you know, teeth from pigs and all this strange stuff. So we started talking with these locals, and they were telling us that these masks, you'd wear them around special events, that they believed the dead would come back during times of the year. And if you did not have one of these masks, they would come after and target you. But if you had your mask and you tried to make it as scary as you could, the belief was that if these spirits came back, they would see you looking scarier than them, and they wouldn't bother you. You know, they'd go harass some of your neighbors instead. So it was really almost a competition to see who could have the scariest and most bizarre-looking masks. And I was able to grab a few and bring them back to the States. And it was a little difficult explaining them to the airport security, what they were for, but they're pretty creepy.
Yeah, well, I mean, what would they ask you? You're bringing in these masks. What do they say?
Well, they asked what they're for, you know, if there are any plants involved in them. And I gave them a brushed over idea that I'm the typical tourist and that they're just souvenirs I'm going to give to my grandparents. You don't want to tell them you're out looking for vampires and you're bringing back these masks to scare off evil spirits. You'll never get through security. So you really have to downplay it quite a bit.
Do you have any of these masks posted on your Unexplained Research website?
We don't, but we certainly can. We have a
sure.
few of them. I'll put those up there for many of your listeners to come check out and look.
And Lex is telling me that you're a feature story in our After Dark magazine.
Yeah, I put together some of the scariest places for your listeners to visit as well, so they want to make sure to grab that.
How about some other spots that you find to be kind of scary?
Sure. I was in the country of Belize, and the country of Belize is just surrounded in jungle, and they have all these lore going around from the protector of the jungle, this creature I was tracking called the Tata Duende. Nobody could track him, George, because it was said his feet were pointed backwards, even though everybody knew his feet were pointed backwards. But they were telling me some of their Halloween lore as well. And there they would leave food on their door, in front of the door, for spirits that came back. Because it was said that if you left this food on the doorstep, that would appease these spirits. And again, they would not harm you. They wouldn't terrorize you. It was like a peace offering. So you had all these people, and they mostly left fruit because that's what they have in abundance there. So they would leave fruit thinking that would help get the spirits off of their land.
Chad, I've been noticing here in the St. Louis area that a lot of people seem to be visiting cemeteries lately. I'm not sure these are folks merely going to see their dearly departed. I think people are just going to cemeteries because it's close to Halloween and they're curious. What do you think?
Certainly. I think you're right on the head there, is that they do, because cemeteries often were thought to be portals between our world and the spirit world. So when your loved one passed on and they were buried in the cemetery, it'd be easier for them to transfer from our world to the spirit world, whatever spirit world you believe they go to. But a lot of cemeteries now, legends are coming out that theory may be working in reverse, that the living is not moving into the spirit world like they should, but the spirit world is coming into our world. So people are going there to try to see that for themselves or be involved with that. And I think that's certainly some of the popularity of cemeteries these days.
Halloween, one of the largest events in this country, in the United States. I think it's number two behind Christmas, having surpassed Thanksgiving. Am I right?
Yes, it is, and it's just amazing. And I think part of that is really the adult segment of our population. As kids, we were all interested in Halloween. I loved Halloween. Did you enjoy it, George?
I did. Of course, I was one of those nerd kids. I never soaped anybody's windows or anything like that.
Right.
I just went looking for candy and came back, and my parents checked it, and I just had a good time.
And I think that's what adults want to do now. Maybe not trick-or-treating, but they dress up. They go out, they want to get scared, they want to bring that safety and adventure a bit of their childhood back. So I think that's what's really moving this trend of being such a big event now in the United States and a worldwide phenomenon, is that adults are embracing it more than they did years back.
What are you doing on Halloween?
I'm certainly going to be at a haunted location here in Wisconsin, and I picked one out that's pretty secluded, so I won't have to worry about police or other legend trippers that are going out there, where I can actually just be there with a few people, and hopefully when we go looking for these strange stories, that hopefully on Halloween the strange is going to be there looking for us.
And Chad, it's not all fun and games going to haunted locations, is it?
It's not. A lot of people feel that is the dangerous place at these haunted locations, and some people even take a lot of effort into protecting themselves on these cases. Depending on their religion or their spirituality, they'll bring certain things with them, holy water, they'll say a prayer.
Well, give us some techniques on what people can do when they go on trips. Plus, we'll take phone calls. Fright Week begins. Here's Chad Lewis next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, get ready for this present. For a limited time, we're offering two CDs of Art Bell and Malachi Martin. If you own one of them, you definitely want the other. We did this several years ago. Subscribe to our After Dark magazine, and you'll get both CDs free with your subscription and when you renew, so when your renewal's coming up. Keep one to complete your set. You can give the other away for Christmas if you want. Just subscribe to After Dark. Call 1-888-727-5505. Lines are open now. 1-888-727-5505 or go online at Coast2TO, coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're going to take your calls with paranormal researcher Chad Lewis in just a moment. Chad, how about some advice for folks wanting to go out, look at haunted locations? What do they bring? What about protection? Is there a danger that spirits can attack them? What?
Certainly, I would bring whatever makes you feel comfortable. If a Bible will make you feel comfortable, bring it. If a saying a prayer or smudging yourself with sage before you go there, do whatever makes you feel comfortable, because a lot of people do believe that spirits can harm them or at least try to harm them. Now, myself, I've never had any encounter where the spirits have tried to harm me or ghosts or any creatures out there in the woods, but a lot of people, it makes them feel much better doing these things in preparation.
Why does sage, the spice sage, why does that kind of repel?
Well, Native Americans have been using it for years, not only to repel evil spirits and keep them at bay, but also to cleanse the person, cleanse yourself, almost as though a protective shield is coming up on you. And they believed it's worked for many years, and oftentimes they'll just throw it right on some fires as well that they're having. So a lot of people will use that and believe that it protects them from spirits, especially those of evil spirits.
What are some of your favorite Halloween legends, Chad?
Well, I like the ones where bad things can happen to you.
You know, what a guy.
Yeah, well, George, if you're going to do these things, you might as well go to the ones that pack a big punch. And a lot of these Halloween stories involve a dare. You have to do something on Halloween, and then the legend will come true. In Iowa City, in one of the cemeteries, there's a Black Angel of Death, as she's called, and she says that she gets darker every year because of all the souls she harvests throughout the year. And the dare is that if you go in there on Halloween evening and touch this angel, you'll be cursed with bad luck and you'll be dead within a week. But Halloween also brings out certain ghosts. There's a bridge here in Wisconsin called the Charlotte Mills Bridge where she only appears on Halloween because during October, several of her family members died and she actually took her own life when she drowned herself in the water. And now she'll appear only on Halloween every year. So if you want to see her, you have to go on that specific day.
Has anybody ever had a picture of her?
No. Well, we know what she looked like when she was alive, but nobody's ever captured her. But we have stories dating back 100 years ago of people seeing strange balls of light hovering on the old bridge that was there, talking about the horse and buggies, horses refusing to cross the bridge because they would see these strange lights and they would pick up on this spirit that everybody thought was the woman, and nobody wanted to cross the bridge.
You know, you go hunting for crypto creatures as well. What are a few, besides the chupacabra, obviously?
Well, I like to hunt all kinds of strange creature, and around Halloween, we often associate it with hellhounds or devil dogs, you know, these phantom creatures that are usually black in color with glowing red or green eyes. Many cultures believe that these creatures actually do the devil's bidding. When I was in Central America, everywhere we went, villagers said, you better be in by nightfall, because if you're not back by dark, you will encounter one of our hellhounds. And if they see you, they have powers and they'll connect themselves with you, and they'll drain your energy, and you'll be dead within a few days. So being the researchers that we were, we made it a point to stay out past dark every night. And luckily, they didn't find us. But I just thought that was great that not only do they have hellhound stories other places in the U.S., but their hellhounds are even more dangerous than we think ours are here in the U.S.
Let's go to Austin, Texas. Nick, east of the Rockies, you're on with paranormal investigator Chad Lewis. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Listen,
good.
I've been with you guys for a long time, and I have a question that I've never heard an answer to. And last night, I wish I could have got in on it as well. But my question is, as far as paranormal as well as maybe alien abduction, what's the correlation between someone who has been abducted as well as someone who's maybe had an experience with an apparition or a ghost or whatnot, someone who hasn't? Is that going to be an increased chance possibly for the person who has not? Because I know certain spirits can attach themselves to certain people from what I've understood.
I would guess, Chad, probably two separate issues, the alien abduction and the visitation, the spirit world visitation. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. And a great question there. And I actually did my master's thesis on beliefs in the paranormal and experiences of students. And what I was finding is that most of them did not have more than one type of phenomenon happen to them. They didn't have an abduction and they were haunted by a spirit or that they saw Bigfoot in the woods. It was, as you just said, George, it was almost one or the other. It wasn't a combination of them. They were seemed to be completely different things. There wasn't a high correlation between the different phenomena.
Next up, let's go to Keith in Gateway, Alaska, west of the Rockies. Keith, thanks for calling.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
Hola, amigos.
Hello.
Question for you, Mr. Lewis.
Yes.
It's quite an honor to speak with you. Chupacabra, in Spanish, does that mean vampire?
No, not literally. A Mexican goat sucker, really. And the reason why it got its name is that was one of the first creatures that it would attack down in Puerto Rico. But when I was there, I was talking to ranchers who said they had all kinds of livestock that was attacked, mostly smaller livestock, chickens, goats, sheep, things like that. But since then, these chupacabra creatures have been reported all over Central America, even southern parts of Florida and Texas. And just last month, I got a report from a woman in middle of Michigan who saw what she thought was this chupacabra digging through some garbage late at night when she was driving by. And of course, she thought she was going crazy, so she didn't stop to find out what this creature was, unfortunately. But yeah, they're thought to be a vampire type creature, sucking the blood and draining it out of these livestock.
Do you get a lot of werewolf stories?
I do. Of course, you know, Linda Godfrey, a frequent guest on your show, she's from Wisconsin, so we do get a lot of reports here, but I've been getting them all over the Midwest. And at first, most people who report them think that it's a bear they're seeing. But then when they get closer, they realize that it's shaped more like a giant wolf with a snout. And it's a biped walking upright on its hind legs like you and I. And
well, we may have lost him again. Okay, Tommy, you have to do it. That's interesting. So he's in a hotel room that has numbers on the phone of 666. Six. That's dangerous, but we'll get him back. In the meantime, we'll go to the phones. We'll take your questions. We've got you in Houston, Texas. Shaggy, first-time caller. Hey, Shaggy, how are you?
Hey, George, how's it going?
Good. Now, that's got to be a nickname for something.
Yes, sir. I've got long hair and a goatee, and the name just stuck.
I love it. Well, let's start with your question. If we get Chad back, great. If not, let's see what we can do for you.
Well, I'll tell you, I got a quick synchronicity story that has to go along with what is happening to Chad and getting disconnected. I work night stocking at Lowe's, and me and a coworker are stocking freight in the flooring department. And I mean, I'm talking just a split second before he got disconnected the first time. We're looking for a certain item number, and it's a flooring grout. And the last three item numbers are 666. And I told Roy, I said, hey, we're looking for the devil grout. And I mean, right then he gets disconnected. Well, then just a few minutes later, he comes back on and he tells his story about the phone, the number being 666. And we're all freaking out over here because it was so, I mean, it was back to back and just blew us away.
I love it.
I was like, I just got to call and tell George that he'd love that. And for people who think they can't get through, I called one time and got right through, and it was awesome.
It's all timing, Shaggy. It's all timing. We've got Chad back on the line, so we'll go back to the calls again. Chad, those 666 boys are out to get you, my friend.
I know. I'm thinking about burning some sage here tonight in my hotel room.
I would not stay in that hotel room, Chad.
I know. I do have a ton of equipment in my car, and I'm literally going to go get it after the conversation and start setting it up to see what I can get here. I may have stumbled onto something.
They're trying to tell you something. Scottsdale, Arizona, wild card line. We've got you, Ben. Go ahead. Hey, Ben.
Good evening, George and Chad.
Good evening.
I had a question regarding the spirit world end of your work, sir. Okay.
Yep.
We hear about spirits. We hear about earthbound spirits. Thank God I haven't had a firsthand, although I've had a secondhand story of one. But my question is there any way to get that spirit to not be so birdy about living here on this, about being attached to this land, and go back out and go back into the spirit world? Do you do anything like that? Do you just look and see, oh, there was a spirit here? What's kind of the deal there?
Well, a lot of people that do have spirits or believe they have them in their home and they want them to leave, they contact us. And although my expertise isn't in the cleansing, as it's called, of a place, I usually refer people to some of the intuitives or psychics that we deal with, but I tag along as well. And what we've found is that for a lot of people, majority of the cases, simply telling the spirit to leave, that they're no longer in charge of this house or they've moved on, it's time for you to be there to leave. But I had a colleague who had a case where a woman was being terrorized by her mother-in-law, even after the mother-in-law died. And the mother-in-law was this old German woman. So the daughter went and got a CD of old German hymns and played it on her CD player as loud as she could. She left for the day, came back, and never had another encounter with the mother again. So a lot of things seem to work, but simply asking these spirits or almost demanding them to leave seems to work pretty well.
That's pretty good. You've got a background in psychology, Chad. Have you used that at all in any of your paranormal investigations?
Yes. I think having a background, a master's and a bachelor's degree in psychology, really helps when looking at belief systems throughout the world and human perception of not only what makes one person believe in the paranormal, what doesn't, but what is it about our human perception that makes us think that we're seeing these things if they're not there. But it also helps interviewing people, looking at avoiding leading questions, looking at signs of how they're remembering it. Are they remembering something they heard versus something they saw? So it really does come in a great deal in investigation.
Let's go to Tiffin, Ohio. Tim, you're on. Go ahead, Timothy.
Hi, George. I talked to you about a year ago. I relayed to you an incident. I had a ghost in a house. My partner and I kind of helped to get a ghost or a guy out of a house.
Police officer, right?
Yes.
I remember.
Law enforcement officer
great,
about 20
great
years.
Story. I use that story at speeches around the country, by the way.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you, George. Feel free. Use it any time. But my question is, my wife and I were talking the other night. We live in a home that we're the sixth generation living in the home, and this conversation came up that I said, oh, it's not the dead you got to worry about, it's the living. She relayed to me a story that an incident that happened to her in the home where she woke up one night, there was a dark figure standing beside the bed, and it slowly rose up into the ceiling. She also relayed to me that my son had seen dark figures in the home. Then she told me that my grandmother on her deathbed in the home made the comment, don't let the dark people get me. Then 3 nights ago, my wife, as we're having this conversation, my daughter and her friend were upstairs watching television, and I heard this, not really a death scream, but a kind of a squeak. What the heck was that? And ran upstairs, and my daughter's friend said, something just went down the hallway. And I thought, okay, that's kind of strange. God, I've never seen anything there. Mm-hmm. Can the dead hurt the living? Maybe I'm wrong. That's my question for you.
Can the dead hurt the living?
Maybe my premise is wrong. Maybe the, you know, my thing is the dead can't hurt the living, but you tell me.
Well, I'll tell you based on my experience and all the theories out there that are certainly only speculation. Now, I don't know if spirits can hurt people. My experience in the 14 years, thousands of cases, is that once in a while we have people who believe spirits are hurting them. We had a case where a gentleman thought a demon-type spirit was chewing on his legs as he slept that night. Not literally chewing at his leg, but just taking his energy. And we've had people who believe they've been pushed, slapped, and shoved by ghosts and spirits. But most of the time, a lot of the people believe it's more of a relative coming back, and they take solace in that, thinking that it's somebody coming back, telling them they're in a better place, that they've moved on. But most of the researchers I've dealt with, we don't come across many cases where people have been harmed, but it certainly is something to keep in mind. And if you want to get rid of the case rather than take your chances with it.
Let's go to Allison driving around in Arizona in a truck west of the Rockies. Hey, Allison.
Woohoo, I'm on.
You got it. You made it.
Hey, guys. Well, I have this, I got some strange kind of going on. I'm planning on moving from Mesa to Phoenix on Halloween Day. And I'm moving into this old duplex. It's in a historic district. It's probably some of the oldest houses that were ever built in Phoenix. I believe it was built back in like the 1910s, 1920s. And the weirdest thing is that I've been having dreams about this place like every night. Like it's an entity, like it's somehow trying to connect with me. And it doesn't feel malicious. It's just odd because I've never dreamed about any place I ever lived in besides, you know, the house I grew up in as a kid. And I was just wondering what his thoughts were on that.
About a minute left, Chad.
Great. It's hard to say. If I were a past life regressionist, I would say that maybe in a past life you had been there, but I think many of your listeners, George, could identify with her that there are certain places that just draw them. They'll go into a place and they'll just love it immediately, or the exact opposite, that they'll get to a place and they'll hate it immediately. So hopefully, for your sake, it's something that you love when you get there. And I'd be curious to hear from you in the future if things still take place while you're there. So make sure to contact me and let me know what happens when you move in.
Chad, how do people get a hold of you?
Certainly, the easiest way is on our website, unexplainedresearch.com. We're always looking for new stories of the weird and the strange, so feel free to contact me off of there.
Happy haunting this Halloween, Chad. Have a great time. And you know what? The important thing is everybody stay safe and enjoy themselves, huh?
Yes, have a great Halloween and keep an eye out.
All right, Chad, thanks again. That's Chad Lewis, and I want to thank all of you for participating in the Q&A with Chad. In a moment, Linda Backman joins us. We're going to talk about reincarnation. What's on the other side? During this entire week, we're going to lead up to Ghost on Friday night with a few little surprises there for you, so we hope you're gathered around the radio late that night. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.